Welcome to Legend Makers, the podcast where education's true heroes take center stage.
We're back, Legend Makers. I'm here with Brendan Powell. Brendan is a K-2 teacher at Collegium Charter in Exton, PA. It's nice to meet you, Brendan.
It's nice to meet you as well.
Yeah. I'm sitting here looking at your bio here. So you're a Vex IQ robotics coach. You're also a Keystone technology innovator and a ViewSonic expert. So I'm reading this. I was watching some of your stuff on now Blue Sky. I've seen you on Twitter as well, or X now. And we'll talk about kind of the Eiffel Tower thing that your kids were building today. You and I were just talking about how fun the age group that you teach is, that K-2. Tell me a little bit more about yourself that I can't glean from your bio. Give us a little bit of background so people know who we're chatting with.
So hi, everyone. My name is Brendan. I am a K-2 STEM teacher, and like, I absolutely love what I do. And one thing I really like to do is, like, I love building. So, like, a lot of times in my classroom, I like to have that energy, like, what I like to do in there. Like, the kids, like, love to build in my room. So, like, every time it's, like, Legos or, like, blocks or anything like that, I jump in with them. And the kids absolutely love it.
So, you're right there. Today, I saw that you were building, what, the Eiffel Tower?
Yeah,
and, what were you doing there?
Right now, we're working on an architecture unit. And my students are going around the world, they say.
Cool.
And they get a little passport book, and they get to draw the Eiffel Tower. And then they actually have to build it out of, like, different blocks and stuff like that.
So this is cool, because I was just talking to Brittany Tarr. Do you know Brittany?
I do not.
She's awesome. You're going to love her drop. She was great. So her pod will be on in a couple of weeks. She's also, she teaches at like an innovation school K-4, and their whole thing is learn through play. And she just kind of gives them, you know, general guidance with maybe a larger objective, but then lets them just go at it. And as I'm thinking about what I watched on your Blue Sky today and the kids building, do they work in groups, or like, do they have like a kind of like an objective of something, and then you just let them go and kind of figure it out together?
What I told them is that all they have to do is that they draw their picture of their Eiffel Tower, show me the picture so I can give them a stamp for being at that place, and then they can start building whatever they want to try to, they're inspired by that building. So like, I let them have the full creativity about that. So like, they really have a lot of creative freedom, and the kids like absolutely love it.
Ah, so do they fail a lot? And I say that in the best sense of the word. In other words, do you get to watch them like the tower fall or something they're trying to build drop?
They get really angry when it falls. But the funny thing is that like, I keep telling them, like, do you think other buildings don't fall? And they're like, yeah, we know. Why are you bringing up the engineering again? They keep always like saying like, stop talking about engineering. We just want to build. I'm like, that's kind of what you're doing. You're being engineers.
So this is great. I want to kind of circle back a little bit. Like, so one of the things that we talk about here is I'm a big fan of purpose. And I've watched teachers over the last 5 years. For those people that have listened to the pod, they know my background. I don't come from education. I fell into it. I started Drone Legends. I was a drone person, walked into a classroom full of kids to talk to them about drones, fell in love with it, saw an opportunity to bring what I was doing into the classroom to help kids. And so I've got my own like reasons for what I do. It's my why, right? We call it why. And why did you start to teach? Like, what got you into teaching? What's your background?
So the funny thing is that I remember distinctly in second grade, I said to myself, I'm never becoming a teacher. This seems too hard. This seems too challenging. I'm never doing this.
Second grade.
Yes.
You had that distinct memory.
Yes.
Of like, I'll never do this.
My second grade teacher told me, like, straight up saying, you said this to me when we had career day, saying you're never becoming a teacher because you never want that stress. And lo and behold, it bit me in the butt, and I'm like, now teaching. And she found out, and she was like laughing her butt off. She's like, I can't believe you're a teacher now.
So why did you start teaching? What got you? What was the, it's, you know, we talk about connecting dots, looking backwards. So tell me about your path into teaching.
So when I was a freshman in high school, my parents volunteered me for my church to work as a like teacher, teacher's aide. And absolutely, like, I worked with fourth or fifth graders, and I didn't like it that much because I was like, oh, they're like too cool for me. And then the next year I was like, I might as well volunteer again, just get more experience. So I went down, like they put me down first grade, and I was immediately, I made those connections with the kids, and they were like instantly like my best friends from that group and stuff like that. And they're like all over me. The teacher barely showed up, so I got to teach them. I had a good relationship with the parents, and a parent came up to my parents and were like, hey, what's he doing after high school? And my mom's like, I have no idea. So he was like, he should go into teaching.
Huh. And that's how it started.
Mm-hmm.
So you just had a knack for it.
Yeah. And then after that in high school, they gave me the opportunity to go into a preschool and like to start teaching. And I kept falling in love with it even more. I'm like, oh, I can see myself actually doing this.
So that's what it is. So that's your reason for doing it. You just love the little kids and you really like working with the younger ones.
Yeah.
What is it about the little ones that you like so much versus, let's say, the fourth and fifth graders? They were a little, like you said, a little too cool. But tell me about the group you work with, that kind of that pre-K through two.
So my kiddos, like they are so like creative and they're really excited about just being there. Like even if the lesson's on like a little like a little more boring and stuff like that, but they're like really into like anything. So just a natural curiosity they have towards everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hilarious because like, they just tell the funniest jokes sometimes because you just have to laugh and just be like in the moment with them. You're like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, they're great. I love that age group. We were talking about it before we clicked record here. It's a fun age group because they're super curious, right? Mm-hmm. Like I find that age group to just be immensely curious, funny, really funny, and full of energy. What is the, so, all right, so, is there a downside? Is there what are the challenges with working with that age group? And so if it's really great, I know you click with them and it's a great thing, but what are some of the challenges you, of that particular age group?
Some of the real challenges is just like behaviors and stuff like that. And a lot of students, like sometimes the kids are like, oh, it's boring. We did this before. I'm like, first off, you haven't done this with me though. Like, and I just tell them like, hey, like just try it. Like I keep telling the kids to try it. And a lot of times they like, struggle just to understand the concept beforehand. So like I have to pre-teach a lot of things and then like mm-hmm. they can actually like I teach a lot of like how to build with a friend, how to like teamwork with a friend. So like a lot of times it's harder with that. So it's like it's fun though to teach them that kind of skills, but it's harder for me as a like trying to get through my lesson and be like, okay, I have to teach you how to raise your hand, then your seat, stuff like that.
And you're specific to STEM. So you're teaching K through two STEM.
Yes.
Tell me, is that, so you're at the charter school. So they have a carve out for specific STEM. Do they come see you? How often do you have them? What kind of pacing do you have with them?
So I have my kids twice a cycle. So like we have a 6-day cycle and I have two specials. They have two specials a day. So they have me for 40 minutes at a time. And I see them at least like for 40 minutes.
Hmm. And what kinds of things? So when we talk about K through two STEM, what does that look like versus STEM at like the middle school level or something? What are they learning and what kind of things are you doing with them? Aside from like the building, the Eiffel Tower and stuff, which we saw.
So a lot of times for my kindergartners and stuff like that, we work on basic problem solving. So like right now, like we did before we started building and stuff like that, we did coding. Mm-hmm. So I'm teaching them basic directions. I told them that they had to get me to walk to the door. With like giving me simple directions, like walking forward, walking backward, turning left and turning right. And the funny thing is that a lot of kids yell at me for it because when they said walk and I just kept walking into them, they got really, really angry. They're like, what are you doing? I'm like, you need to problem solve. Like maybe give me some steps saying walk this many steps and stuff like that. So like working on those basic coding skills of like following directions.
So you're using what I guess is called unplugged coding in a lot of ways. So you're just basically around me, like, hey, direct me, give me instructions. And so if they don't tell you to walk 10 feet versus 5 feet, you can walk right into them. And they're like, mm-hmm. what are you doing? And you're like, well, you didn't tell me to like stop or pace this many. That's cool. So you meander around the classroom, like your own, like a robot.
I also do like, I also try to do like different drawings with them. I'm like, okay, I'm at my whiteboard. You got me to my whiteboard. Now I need to draw a picture. And I tell them to draw me a smiley face. So I'm up there drawing smiley faces for them. And they get really like annoyed with me whenever I'm like, okay, I need to draw a circle. And I just draw a small circle. And they're like, you need to make it bigger. I'm like, okay, make it a little bigger. And they're like, and they have to tell me saying, make it bigger. Like, it has to be a large circle. I'm like, oh, okay. So I finally make the large circle. The kids are like, finally, it took you 5 steps to do this. I'm like, well, you kept giving me the wrong direction, guys.
Yes, you didn't give me the more specificity, right? Be specific. Yeah. Do you think that like what you're doing, like imagine where these kids are going to grow up in, right? So if you think about that, you know, preschool, they're going to live in an AI world. And I think what you're doing is not, it's beyond coding, because I think you need, these kids are going to need to learn how to engage with AI. Think critically, like to your point, like when you want something from AI, I guess they call it prompt engineering. I don't know if everybody wants to you call it that, but that's what I've been calling it. And
I've been calling that.
Yeah. And so you're kind of prompt engineering them, right? Like you need a specific outcome. So how big of a circle? If you just tell me to draw a circle, that could mean anything. It could mean, it could mean I could circle the earth, or I could circle just this little spot right here. So what kind of circle? So you're teaching them kind of the early stages of AI prompting as well.
And the crazy thing is that like my first graders right now are actually working on AI. So like, I'm actually teaching them like how to interact with a chatbot and stuff like that. And I told them, I'm like, this is not real. This is just a program just talking back and forth with you. So like try and teach the ethics behind it as well as like understand like, oh, this is what it's supposed to be doing.
And what are you using as a chatbot? What kind of?
So we are using Magic School right now.
Magic School. Okay.
And the kids absolutely love it. And they've been like they've been asking me to like help them respond to the prompts because they can listen to it. Like they bring their headphones and everything like that. So like they're talking back and forth with it. And one kid's like, Mr. Powell, look at this. It's not working. I was like, did you stump it? And they're like, I don't know. Can you like try to help them? So I help them through the process. They're like, okay, let's look back at what we said before. And some kids just said emojis to it. And they're like, I was like, that's probably why it's not working, because it doesn't know what you're talking about.
Okay, cool. That's wild, man. I can't believe that they're all, that's what they're going to be into. This is going to be wild to watch these kids grow up into this world. I was listening to something yesterday where it was like, Jeff Bezos just did an interview, rare one. He rarely talks. And he was talking about like, you know, people thought the internet was like the gold rush. And he said, no, a better analogy is for like electricity. Like electricity is like a thin horizontal thing that runs across everything, right? Like it powers, it's under everything, right? We said, think of AI as that. Like the internet was kind of like that. And that's what he saw early on. He goes, AI is the next thing that's going to be like that flat horizontal that everything's built on top of. And it powers and charges and does almost everything. And these kids, I think it's a good analogy versus like the gold rush analogy where it's like, it's just temporary. It's kind of an in grab and then go, and then it's gone. And no, this is here to stay. And it's ultimately going to be in everything that we do. It's going to permeate all that we do.
Yeah, all my kids are like, where am I going to see AI? I'm like, let's think about it. And they finally realize after I tell them, I'm like, you use Snapchat. That's what, like, if you use Snapchat and you change your face filters, that's AI. Mm-hmm. If you use Google Maps, that's Google, that's AI. And they're like, oh, I was like, your Alexas at home are AI.
That's right. It was one of the earlier forms of kind of a talking AI that we had seen. Letting that thing in our house, and we've all got him now, right?
Yeah.
Orwell's rolling over in his grave. So let me ask you this then. I was even at a young age, I was kind of that little troublemaker. I was just always kind of rambunctious and a rebel rouser. What kind of strategies? So if you're thinking about like who's listening, new teachers, maybe they're going to enter into the K-2 space like yourself. What are some of the strategies you use in terms of for that problem child? Because it can be disruptive, right? So for the larger group of students, you get that one little outlier, the little, like I call them, the little Scotty Buells of the world that can make things real rough. How do you handle that?
So one thing I do in my classroom is like, I do a thing called secret student
Secret student. Okay. Got it.
So secret student, how it works is that like I randomly choose a student when they walk in my classroom. And if they're making great choices, I give them positive feedback. I'm like, oh, I love how my secret student is sitting at their seat. I love how my secret student's like playing nicely with a friend and all these like compliments and stuff like that. And then at the end of class, I announce the secret student if they got like a special prize, which is like a sticker or something like that. And then also I do a thing called roar points. we have like our behavior management plan at our school is called ROAR.
ROAR, so R-O-A-R, like a lion, like ROAR points.
Yep.
Great.
So it's for be respectful, being outstanding, being accepting, and being responsible.
Okay.
So like this whole class is trying to earn as many ROAR points as they can. And they can earn up to 4 a class period. And then they try to earn like a lollipop party or a popsicle party at the end of the, like at the end of the month.
So you gamify it a little bit, you know, make them feel like a little game they're collecting, and they can redeem those points for some sort of a party or something like that for the class.
Yep.
Oh, that's nice. That's really cool. That's a strategy. Now, so when you went to school, are there, again, I was talking about like the business aspect. I like to listen to podcasts and read books. I'm a voracious book reader, and I read like all business books and marketing books and things like that, because I want to just make it for my company. I want to be able to make sure that I'm like schooled up and I'm constantly learning. Do you have resources that you go to that, like when you were starting out, maybe if you were like struggling or you were like, I don't know how to deal with this, were there places or resources or books that you read that you found valuable that you might want to share with us? Anything that we can...
So like I've been like doing a, like I'm a part of this organization that's called PAACT, and I'm really involved with that, and they do doing a lot of book studies and stuff like that. So I did a whole like book study on how to teach AI, and that's actually a book that's just came out. They were having one all about student engagement. Like it's all like I constantly am learning. I'm actually in my master's program right now for
So PAETC is the Pennsylvania Association of Educational Communications and Technology. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And what book did you read? Do you know the title of it?
I actually have it right next to me.
Hold that thing up. Let's see it.
It's called How to Teach AI.
Did I see ISTE on the side of that thing?
Yes, it is.
It's an ISTE book.
It is.
So ISTE published that book?
Yes.
And it's How to Teach AI. Is it specific to K-2 or is it that
K-12?
Oh, it's literally How to Teach AI K-12.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Cause I like resources. I love being able to like point people in directions. Can anybody get that book?
Yep. It's on Amazon. And I actually, the author is actually a PA resident.
Really? Oh, she and is. You live in PA, right? So you live in like the Lancaster area?
Yes.
Cool. And you teach in Exton, PA, which I'm familiar with. Like I said, I lived in Philadelphia for a long time. That's Philly suburbs. And now I'm over here in South Jersey where all the drones are flying around. As we're recording this, we're in the middle of the drone mystery phenomena, right? So,
yeah, I actually go down to South Jersey all the time for like the beach and stuff.
Yeah. So we're right near what beach do you go to?
Avalon,
the shore, as we say here, right? The beach, you go down the shore, right? So, I think that book's cool. I might actually read that book. I'm curious.
I highly recommend it.
Yeah, I'm going to link to it. So, so let's go there. This may be a good segue then. If you were coaching somebody thinking about getting into teaching or just starting out, you know, what advice would you give them? Because, you know, we need more teachers, and it's a noble profession. I say this every podcast. I'm in awe of what you guys do on a daily basis. It's exhausting. I've run workshops. I go to classes and I meet the people that run our programs here at Drone Legends. And I got to tell you, when I spend a day with them, I'm fired up. I'm filled, right? I'm like full to the brim with all their energy, but it's also exhausting, right? I'm an older guy now, and it's like, woof, man, that's a lot of work. And you're on your feet and you really are moving. And you know, there's a stigma around some teaching in this day and age. We were talking about it with Brittany last night. I interviewed her. And what would you say to somebody thinking about getting into it or, you know, just starting?
My one big advice is always be flexible. Like, I know lesson plans are like, you go, but go, go, go. But sometimes you just need to take a step back and be like, okay, let's make this better. Like, let's reteach something. What this student didn't understand this. Let's go back and help him or her. Like, just helping, like, there's always being flexible on your feet and just being able to, like, adapt, like, always keep learning. That's one of my big things. It's like, I never want to stop, like, learning new things because the world of education is always evolving and changing.
And where do you think it's evolving into? Where do you see it going?
I see a lot of, like, push towards technology. Like, I know a lot of kids have one-to-one devices, but why not using those one-to-one devices to actually teach the students, and us being like a mentor to the kids to be like, if you don't understand this concept, come to me and I'll teach it to you one-to-one, mm-hmm. or like having a small group and stuff like that.
So as a STEM focused teacher, that is your area of expertise. And what's your master's in? What are you going in, master's in ed?
I'm getting my master's in technology innovation with a concentration in education.
Sweet. That's nice. Very nice. So So let's get back to like this advice kind of thing, because that's really what I want. So avid learner, so you've already given us a great resource for the book. Are there any other places you can think to go in terms of when you were just starting out? Like, tell me about when you first started. How long have you been teaching, by the way?
So this is my third year teaching STEM right now.
Third year.
And I've been started out as a building sub.
Oh, okay.
So I worked at one district as a building sub right after I finished my student teaching, which was right after like when COVID was still around. Like COVID was like the hype of COVID.
Yeah.
And how was that? That was interesting.
With this age group?
Oh yeah. Cause like I had to, my student teaching, I had all in person and all the kids wore masks and they're all 3 feet apart. And then after that, right before Thanksgiving break, I was supposed to student teach like my whole entire week. And then we went into shutdown.
Yeah.
And my kids were all virtual. So I had to switch my lessons real quick to all virtual lessons. And I was on Zoom with the kids and they're like, I don't understand this. I can't find this app. I'm like, okay, let's see what's on your screen. Like, and I told them, I'm like, I had little icons up there saying, we're going to click on this app and then we're going to just listen to my voice and you're going to follow the step by step. And they all had iPads, so they're like all yelling at me through the iPads, and they're not on mute, so like they're all screaming saying, I got this, I got it. I'm like, okay, turn yourself on mute and go do your work. If you have questions, come on Zoom.
Oh my gosh.
And then after that, I had a week after Thanksgiving break, we had hybrid. So like I had half my class in person, half my class at home, and I had to mix my lessons up like that. And I had science content going on in the classroom, like science experiment. And then other kids were learning about plants on like videos. And if they had questions, they could hop on any time. It's very disruptive whenever that happens.
Oh. Very challenging. I can only imagine. But I will tell you, I started my company in January of 2020. So this time, 5 years ago, I was like getting started. I had walked into this classroom. I had been a drone operator. I was like, this is what I'm going to do. I was getting everything ready in January. I was hitting the new year running, and then boom, right? March hits. I have started to refund people. And I just started to go, I didn't even know it. But man, remember, I didn't have any education. I was like, Zoom, what's that? And I was like, Google Classroom, what's that? We're going to do this. And I started doing drones. I mean, I feel your pain through the screen, because I was working with like 10-year-olds, right, on Zoom, and we were doing these in the house. They were in their bedrooms zipping these things around, like coding them, and the coding app was they couldn't connect. And to your point, you were just talking, I'm laughing because I can remember. And it's funny because today I was with one of my marketing people and we were going back through my archives of like, I was like, look what I was doing. I was like, watch some of these. They're hysterical. These little kids were great. And that they'd be like, I can't connect it. I'm like, all right, wait, Spotlight, get over here, hold up your tablet and let me see what the heck you're doing. They're so adorable. I'm like, well, I'm doing this and you're here. And I remember just having to go, this is cool. It's all good. And you had like eight 10-year-olds up on your screen and you're dealing with kindergarten.
I was in first grade with it, and they're all screaming at me saying, well, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm like, I don't know either.
I love it. Did you record any of those? You ever go back and watch them?
I do. Like, well, my students, like, well, my professors recorded it, and she sent me, like, because I just graduated 4 years ago to that, like, this weekend.
Okay.
And my professor sent it to me, and she said, look at all your kiddos. And I'm like, I don't want to watch this. I cannot watch this right now.
Oh, it's great. They're so fun. It's hysterical. They were actually, gosh, those kids are amazing. I mean, I look back and I think I remember it. And again, part of me goes, oh, what the heck were we doing? And then the other part is like, look what we were doing. It was really cool. I mean, for me, it woke me up and I went, wait a minute. Cause I would have like a kids from, I remember one day I looked up and I went, wow, they're from, that brother and sister are from San Diego or San Francisco. And then I've got that, those two brothers, they're in New Mexico. And I got this girl, she's in Minnesota. I got another girl, she's down in Maryland. I got some kids over here from Jersey. And I was like, guys, look at this community we just built. Check this out. Like, look where everybody's from. Isn't this cool? And that's when it, the light bulb clicked for me. And I was like, oh yeah, this should absolutely not just be regional for me. This should be around. So that was fun. But when you, so you've been teaching now. So when you first started, you had to deal with that, which was kind of a wild, you know, what's the initiation into the profession, right? Like you must've thought, oh my gosh, what am I doing? Coping mechanisms. What did you do? How did you handle it? And what did you go to? What was your go-to kind of like serenity now thing?
So one thing I like to do, like whenever I'm like stressed out from work or anything like that, I love to go like outside. Like I love being outside. I like to run. I like to go for like walks and like hikes and everything like that. I also like after COVID, like once like the gyms started working out, like I started working out and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's been really, really helpful. Like clearing my head after a like long day of work. I'm like, thank goodness I need, like, I just needed this. Like I get these kids are like wild, but like, I just need that like cool down and everything like that.
I think a good walk is, I have dogs and my dogs are the best. So I just grab them and go, let's go for a walk. And you get outside and you think you have some peace and quiet a little bit, and it's just you and the dogs, and you kind of take a backwoods path or something. And walking, I think, is very important. I think it's good to let your mind kind of wander, not have like stressing out over things, just kind of let yourself go and just let it. Cause that's, I think when some breakthroughs happen, when you have like your big ideas, it's kind of like singing in the shower, right? That's like another place where kind of breakthroughs happen. And you're right. It's calming. And so is the gym. I'm an avid gym guy too. I love to go in the gym and work out and kind of burn off some stuff. I'm a morning guy, but I think end of the day is a nice way to kind of finish up the day as well.
Like all my coworkers yell at me saying like, I can't believe you run right after you're done doing buses. And I'm like, guys, if I don't run, like I will be stressed out tomorrow. You don't want to see me stressed out tomorrow. And it clears my brain after a long day of work. And they're like, oh, we never really thought about that. I'm like, yep.
Yeah, running does. Do you run? Well, this is interesting. Do you listen to music or anything when you run, or do you just go?
I just go.
That's the way to do it, right? So that allows you to just kind of be at one with kind of your thoughts and let them just kind of flow around and let stuff happen and think things through. And that's like the walk, right? I walk with quiet, right? Yeah. Like no music or anything like that. Sometimes I'll put on a good podcast and listen to that. But other than that though, yeah, I think that's a great strategy for just kind of decompressing is easy.
A lot of my quick lessons come from that.
Yeah, exactly. Just that kind of walking, running, you're at your own with your own thoughts and you get some good ideas, some good lessons. Let's do this. How about optimism? I love it. So we already touched a little bit on you teaching AI and where these kids are going to grow up. You know, I think COVID exposed a lot of cracks in our education system. And I think that a lot of the education models, I don't know if it's, well, you'll tell me, I think some of the education model here in the States is somewhat antiquated. I think it's, you know, based on kind of the 100 years ago kind of model, and it hasn't changed a whole lot in that time. I think there are pieces of it that have, but I think fundamentally the structure is still largely the same. And Brittany was kind of breaking that mold last night when I talked to her. It was really interesting. You should follow her, Brittany Tarr on Blue Sky. She's great. You'd love her. She's wild because she works with young ones too. She's right in your age. She's really awesome. She's doing some studies and she's publishing and she's just amazing. You should follow her. I'll connect you guys. But we talk a little bit about like where is it going? What are you, and I like to love, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, so I have to be kind of optimistic all the time. I have to always see the glass half full. And I live like that. I always have been like that. It's just kind of the way I'm wired. What are you optimistic about? What excites you in education?
I'm happy that like STEM's getting more focused and stuff like that, and like schools and stuff like that, especially in the state of Pennsylvania. Like a lot of times the science and technology and engineering were all pushed to the side. But now with the new like standards that just came out for Pennsylvania, they're requiring more and more teachers to teach STEM, and there's a lot of pushback. But the thing is, like, I'm happy to break that mold out. Be like, hey, I'm here to help you. I'm the STEM teacher. Like, I can bring in like what you guys teach in science into my classroom, so we can make those cross-curricular connections and stuff like that.
Yeah, what is the pushback exactly?
a lot of the older teachers that like been teaching for a while don't like that they're like these standards are called three-dimensional standards, and that means that like they have like a activity that gets involved and stuff like that, and it's not just like reading a book and stuff like that. Like this is science.
Is that Steele's? So,
like, yes.
Is it PA Steele's?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
So like a lot of my teacher friends like that I'm like working with, I'm like, oh, are you guys excited to start teaching more science and stuff like that? And they're like, oh, we have to start teaching more science. And I'm like, that's kind of where we're going towards like these standards, because they are getting assessed in the next couple of years.
Hmm. Wow. Interesting. So you're optimistic that there's more STEM that excites you. There's more STEM being brought into the classrooms. What else? What else do you see on the horizon that you think is kind of cool, or some of the kind of the way the education is getting shaken up? I've seen some cool stuff. You with your age group, you must have a lot more flexibility to do some interesting kind of innovative things than let's say like seventh grade, right?
Yeah. Like I feel like that, like a lot of my students are like, understanding that creativity is kind of the way we need to go. And I love that, like, they come up with some ideas that I never thought of. Like, we did, like, our Balloons Over Broadway activity, and some of the kids were like, can I cut the plate to make it smaller so the robot can hold it? I'm like, go for it. Like, I never really thought about that. But, like, the thing they're like, other ones are like, can I use this piece of cardboard? I don't want to use the plate. And they're, like, coming up with different solutions. I'm like, I'm happy to give you guys all the accommodations you want. Like, this is like your project. This is not mine. Like, I tell them all the time, I'm like, this is your project. It's not my project. And as long as you like follow that criteria on the board, I don't care what it looks like.
What is Balloons Over Broadway? Forgive my ignorance.
So so there's a book called Balloons Over Broadway, and it's a children's story all about the Macy's Day Parade. Mm. It's about the history of it and how it all works and how like, I forget his name, but like he like had to problem solve and had to make the balloons float through like the streets of Broadway, like through the streets of New York. And the kids, like I told the kids, I'm like, do you think he gave up? And all of them like, no, he showed perseverance and stuff like that. So I'm like, okay, now it's your turn. You're going to design your own balloon, and we're going to have a robot be able to code it to go around my classroom and hold your balloon. And all the kids absolutely loved it. They like lost their mind. They're like, this is the best day ever. It's actually flying through the sky.
Is that your lesson plan?
So I got inspiration from other teachers and stuff like that. But like I made it modified for my students and stuff like that. Cause we're not allowed to have balloons in school. So I use paper plates and everything like that. And the kids could like make it any which way they want.
Oh, so you're not allowed to have the balloons. Okay. Yeah. So they did paper plates as the balloon characters.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Yeah, Macy's. You're like second person I've heard this year that's talk. I guess because Thanksgiving was just around the corner. There is a big story behind the Macy's Day Parade. It was like, I forget exactly why it started. Do you know the background? Like, why did it start?
It started because the Macy's had a lot of immigrants that worked there, and they missed being home for the holidays. So Macy's wanted to celebrate them being immigrants and stuff like that, and they were like, oh, let's hire this one person to help us set up our parade. And he like came up with the idea. So like, oh, we should add these animals. And he, like, the animals were scaring the kids throughout the parade. So he was like, why not make like marionettes that are upside down and stuff like that and flying through the sky like that. And it was like such a cool story for the kids, because they're like, they never realized that kind of stuff.
Yeah, right. I don't think a lot of people know the actual genesis of the Macy's Day floats and all that, and the balloons in particular, right?
Yeah.
Remember that one year, didn't Garfield explode or something like that?
Yeah.
Was it Garfield? Did I get that right?
I think so.
Yeah, I think it was one of them that remember ripped apart. Yeah, I remember that vividly.
I told all my kids, I'm like, he had to problem solve, and it's still not like perfect technology right now. Like, it's okay if your balloon, I was like, it's okay if your balloon pushes the robot off the track. It's not a big deal. And they're like, but I'm like, no, like I'm the, like, you're the coder. You're the, like, you're just made the model and we're just testing it to see if it works.
Well, that's great. I'll tell you what, This has been good. This has been excellent. I think this is a lot of good nuggets here. I love the book. I think that's a gold getter. I mean, I think everybody should probably read that. That's K through 12. We're going to link to it in the show notes below. Any last thoughts for anybody out there listening? That's again, this is your audience. Are your own peers? Are those about to be your peers?
All I'm going to say is have fun with it. Don't give up. Like, don't give your energy like when you're teaching. Because the kids see that, and always be like that one teacher that always like wants like to have fun and learn with them.
That's amazing. Good stuff. Well, Brandon, thank you so much, man. We can find you. We're going to link to your Blue Sky. People follow you. You've got a lot of cool stuff. Anywhere else? Where else are you?
I'm on X, which is Mr. Powell 20. I'm also on Instagram. I'm Mr. Powell 10. Definitely follow me because like I post every single day of my classroom. Great. And stuff like that.
Excellent. We'll link to your socials in the show notes for sure. All right. Listen, that was it. It was a pleasure to meet you. I appreciate you coming on the pod, and everybody, I hope you got a good one today. This was great. Thank you so much, Brendan.
Thank you. Take so care. Much.
Bye-bye.